Welcome to Pharma Talk Radio Podcasts. This podcast is focused on leveraging mobile technologies and the development of novel digital endpoints. It is from the 2022 Mobile Tech and Clinical Trials Conference, a sister event to the DPharm Conference. For more information about these conferences, our editorial, podcasts, and webinars, please visit dpharmconference.com. Thank you and enjoy the podcast.
All right, so Michelle, good to see you here. We had a couple of pre-meetings, and we decided we had a lot more questions that we can possibly cover in the 19 minutes and 39 seconds or so. But can you tell us a little bit about how you think about digital science and digital health and the science of digital?
Thank you, Tony, and thank you for staying with this track. And I know there's a lot of great content, and I wanted to just take a minute to actually thank the organizer for inviting me back. So 3 years ago, this was exact the venue that I met my current employer.
All right.
Enjoy your networking. So right now, I'm the head of digital science at AbbVie, and it's really an incredible privilege and opportunity to lead the team there. Our team basically is composed of a digital health strategist and also signal processing scientist. Mm-hmm. And we specifically position ourselves to be in the scientific area. So answering your question, some people look at the digital health as a way to engage patient, and some may look at it as a way to actually commercialize your product. Our specific strategic position is really focused on the science, using digital health technology as the drug development tools. And so if you're thinking about developing digital biomarkers that can potentially identify signals that can actually predict a disease outcome, disease progression, then there's biomarker development pathway that you can follow, follow very much a specific scientific methodology that you can develop and test, validate, and get scientific approval. But if you're thinking about using digital health technology for clinical outcome assessment, so you heard about TransCelerate doing the novel digital endpoint effort, then you have a COA development pathway that you follow. So it's about really looking at things, where you position it, and how you develop a credible evidence validation package to get regulatory acceptance. So that's kind of where we position it.
Nice. And I think we've heard a lot this morning about the patients and when they come in. What's your thought in general about how do you make those things more meaningful for patients? Are they?
Yeah. When we had our preparation call, I told Tony that I actually have very, I don't want to say a controversial feeling about this topic, because I think a lot of time I hear people keep saying major things meaningful to the patient. And I sometimes feel like when we keep talking about things like without substance or details, that it make it become meaningless, to actually so-called measuring things more meaningful to the patient. Because I think when you survey patient, you talk to patient, a disease is not a state that people want to live with, right? So get rid of the disease still should be kind of the core focus of our pharmaceutical development. So focus on the disease, understand the disease, and help patients to get rid of disease and really allow them to live in the disease-free state should still be a top goal when we talk about patient centricity. And so then thinking about, how do we measure things when people are actually living in a chronic disease condition because we couldn't get rid of those disease? Then understand what the key disease burden to them. I think you heard earlier from the DIMES initiative about nocturnal scratch, right? Atopic derm patient suffers severe itch, the sensation of itch, and then that caused them to scratch all night long, could not get good night's sleep. So patient then would tell you they're fatigued. So those are disease burdens. So when we understand those, then you start thinking about, well, how do you measure things more meaningful to them? How do you position all the evidence tools that you can actually leverage to develop the drug? Think about using EPRO. EPRO is a patient-reported outcome. But you know, collecting things from patient doesn't just mean it's patient-centric, because you are actually leveraging patients to report their outcome. But is that majority of the EPRO, I believe they are developed based on the patient-focused drug development program. So they are, you know, fundamentally should be patient-centric. But we still have to understand, well, these are tools to capture the concept of interest, but then how do you go further, right? So patients say, I scratch all night long. So when you have the concept, the next step is to think about, well, is there any other tools can help you detect the frequency, the duration, the intensity of that concept? So this is where actually DHT can come into play and allow you to really capture in depth the meaningfulness to the patient and help them to really reflect that symptom, whether improved by the intervention that you're actually administer in their body or you know, any kind of other treatment regimen you're providing. So I think it's really important for us to really position the patient centricity in a more meaningful way, not just you know talk about patient you know meaningfulness to patient. And I also wanted to say, from oncology perspective, a lot of time the you know the biomarker research identify the right patient for the right trial still should be the core of our research. We should not be let just thinking about using technology because that potentially can overburden patient actually. So we have to really think about like if you are the patient, then what sort of a clinical trial environment that you want it to be in.
Yeah, a lot of really good points. I mean, I'm hearing also that why versus the what. Mm-hmm. But Dan said something this morning that I thought was really perceptive. Well, a few things. But one of them was around what we're trying to do with clinical trials being to measure things. So the example that he just brought up, in a way, you can think of as a better way to measure how patients actually feel in a way that potentially puts less burden on them. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I worry about a lot is that complexity. So how do we make sure that we deal with accurate data, accurate measurements, while not putting a lot of undue burden and complexity to the patient? So how do we measure better without reducing access? I was wondering if you can talk a little bit about that.
Thank you. So the way I kind of think about this is that you have to be intentional. So like I said, put yourself in the patient's shoes. And so when we are actually developing a novel endpoint or considering using DHT as the right tool to generate the evidence, often we start with the concept of interest, a concept that we wanted to measure. Then we go through that to define the criteria, how we're going to select the DHT that will match that criteria. So when you do the DHT tool selection, I think in the new draft guidance, it talk a lot about like, you know.
I was just going to ask about that. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to also consider the patient burden side, right? The draft guidance even talk about like, well, are you going to use patients' own data plan to actually collect the data? Is there any kind of risk that you should disclose on that technology? So I think when you define your search criteria for your DHT, those should be part of your assessment category. And once you identify maybe a few that you are going to move forward for testing, draft guidance also talk about you should actually implement usability testing. So the way that our team does it, and we are actually just recently set up a digital science lab, is to actually specifically allow our engineers and scientists to able to conduct those testing and really understand about the burden of managing these technology at home. And then we will bridge over to like phase one unit, allow us to actually also test it potentially on patient population as well. So I think it's important for us to really be intentional and develop these processes to minimize that potential burden. And then once you kind of conduct it in the patient population trial, document the learning so you don't repeat those kind of challenge, and then come to the forum like this and share your learning so people don't repeat making the same mistakes. I think if we can all do that, all patients will probably really appreciate our effort.
Yeah. No, thanks. You mentioned the FDA draft guidance. I mean, there is quite a bit of effort that we've seen recently from the regulators. Maybe we can see a show of hands if anybody here has absolutely no questions around the regulatory state of being. So assuming, like, I can't see people over there in the back, but I assume there's nobody with no questions. So any tips and advice how to best navigate the regulatory landscape, not just in the U.S., but globally as well?
Mm. Yeah, it's an excellent question, because I think especially if you're doing novel digital endpoint development, digital biomarker development, early alignment with a regulatory agency is really critical. So I think a U.S. Agency, they have really defined three nice pathways you can engage them, and they keep saying that come engage early. So like CPM meeting, I think I heard multiple talks talk about it. So before you actually put the drug into the clinical trials, CPM meeting is one way that you can engage early, talk about the concept you potentially wanted to measure. So after your IND submission, you could potentially leverage those kind of channels. So that's one. And secondly, I think a lot of the pharma company sponsors are part of the pharma, bio, a lot of these advocacy group. So you have another channel that to your advantage to actually engage the agency to consult. And a lot of these opportunities allow you to bring use case forward. Although both CPAN and these type of meetings are non-binding, you can actually get some early feedback from some of the concept or some of the challenges you encounter. And I would say the most useful program that we have experienced is actually leverage your type C meeting. So like, you know, phase 2A stage, if you are actually going to test your technology or endpoint for exploratory endpoint to gather some results, I think through your briefing book, along with your protocol, you can probably get some useful written feedback back. So that would be a great touch point that's really specific to your drug development program. And I highly recommend, like, at the end of phase two, once you get the result back, analyze them, then request the actual meeting for in-depth discussion. I think those are another way that you can actually help build up the stronger case to bring your endpoint forward. And I think, you know, the regulatory guidance that got released in December, that was a kind of a Christmas gift for a lot of us, and we've been waiting for that guidance. And it was really, really interesting to see the agency now have really provide much better clarity on like how you can implement DHT in the clinical trials. They give you numerous examples in the draft guidance. But one thing I do wanted to highlight, and I asked Tony if we can actually discuss this, is that we know the PI is responsible for the conduct of a clinical trial, particularly monitoring safety, patient safety. And the DHT presents as a unique kind of position because none other data is a continuous producing yes. The data. DHT is. So that creates a big data sort of storage burden on the site uniquely to DHT. And secondly, DHT, majority of them are not validated. I should say endpoints are not validated. So some of the algorithms, maybe the multiple vendor has developed and validated some algorithm, but a lot of them are not. So at this early stage, when the agency in the draft guidance is supposed to say, hey, we need to make the PI accessible to all data because they're responsible for safety, I think we need to actually clarify, well, what type of data we can actually ready to share, and are we going to ask the PI to take action upon receiving, reviewing this data? Probably it's a bit premature. So I would say that, you know, in the validated situation, phase three, you're using as a primary or secondary endpoint. Those, you've probably already gone through a lot of discussion with the agency. The tool is validated. At that stage, you should share the process data. But in the earlier stage, when you're still just collecting raw data and you're going to do a lot of process in the back end in your data warehouse, those data, you might create discrepancy if you use a vendor algorithm versus your own later algorithm. So I think that is an area that we should actually have a more in-depth discussion with the agency to figure out how we help the investigator and the site to organize these data as a source data and then provide access to investigator and inspectors for regulatory compliance purpose.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point. I mean, I've argued for some time that one of the hopeful aspects of this whole remote world and digital world, you can potentially get much better safety for the patient, but that comes with some additional burden, potentially in the PI, potentially some additional liability and risk. Not sure this is quite solved yet. If anybody has ideas, I'd love to hear them. But say if you have a continuous ECG monitoring system like we just saw an hour and a bit ago, what kind of responsibility do you have as the PI potentially finding rare events and dealing with the false positives and false negatives? Certainly conversations I've had with various folks in legal, among others, right? So... ideas are highly welcome. I know we only have another 3 minutes or so left. I wanted to make sure that we have some time for questions as well. But, you know, one of the really awesome things about DFARM is that you have sponsors of pharma like the two of us. We have also vendors in tech and devices. And, you know, the question begs itself, well, who do we expect to develop those tools and to what extent and to what level? Thoughts? So who does it? Do we have to? Do we have to ask, you know, I'm not going to call out names, but you know who you are, you know, to run the clinical trials for us and develop actual validated primary endpoints? Who does it? Well, so I don't have an answer. My prediction, and you know, given that this is not recorded as far as I know, my prediction is that as soon as we start having things that are accepted by payers, we'll start seeing a lot more movement in this direction. So things that connect our clinical trials to the real world, to the true real world, and you know, value-based outcomes and measures. But that's just my prediction. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a tough question because I, in my own opinion, I feel like it depends on different business model. If you are profiting from certain type of technology, that's your business model, then I think that entity probably should bear the burden of proof. You know, because I think the regulators wanted to see the evidence package if you're using that to provide medical guidance and things like that. And but for us, pharma industry using these as a drug development tool, I think that might be a more shared type of a model. So, you know, the device company can bring in semi-validated in the healthy volunteer setting, but then when it's going to transition into the patient population, depends on, you know, where and which drug development program you have, then you know, the sponsor might want it to actually further validate it in the proper population. So that's a more the share model.
Yeah, so we have 1 minute left, so let's see if anybody has a burning question. If not, I have one more question for Michelle. And I'm sure you can find both of us afterwards. So, not seeing anybody with a burning question. Any last thoughts, Michelle, about just the practical implementation and logistics? How does one go about implementing one of those new tools?
Yeah.
Who do you convince?
I I think you need a leadership buy-in for sure from top down. Mm-hmm. And I would say that, you know, to do this successfully, it's a team sport. So besides your leadership get behind you, you need to also work collaboratively across your, not just your operation team, your regulatory colleagues, your legal, your QA, everyone need to be on board. So make friends within your company, make friends in the, you know, with vendors, and also leverage all the consortia. I think Dime's here, and there are quite a few other consortia. I think a lot of them are involved as well. So I think we are done piloting, right? So let's make this as a series of business and treat it as a scientific discipline. And then, you know, if we build credible evidence, I think regulatory is ready to review. So I'm very optimistic and hopeful. And I know, you know, we're hanging this in this field for 10 years. We're finally seeing the momentum picking up. So I think, yeah, you know, let's get it through the last mile. Yeah.
All right. This is a really good way to end this on the glass. Three quarters full, I guess. Let's thank Michelle.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
For more information about these conferences, our editorial, podcasts, and webinars, please visit dpharmconference.com, and that's dpharmconference.com. Thank you, and we hope you enjoyed the podcast.